Hey, and welcome to the Stay Wild Trauma Child podcast. I'm Steph.
And I'm Jamie, your trauma tour guides. Please keep your hands, arms, and legs.
Oh, Jamie. Yeah. We're their hosts.
As I was saying, we are two best friends that are openly sharing their healing journeys while navigating sudden loss, parenthood, relationships, mental health, and so much more.
So this is your trigger warning that Jamie and I will be discussing highly sensitive topics, including abuse, domestic violence, and murder in most, if not all, of our episodes.
We aren't for the faint of heart. We cuss like sailors, and we have a pretty dark sense of humor. So if either of those things bother you, this is where your tour ends.
Oh, hey, Jamie. Yeah. Don't forget to tell them that we aren't medical professionals.
Oh, yeah. We're definitely not medical professionals, but we probably need them.
So grab your favorite drink, get cozy, and get ready for a whole lot of laughs and maybe even a little bit of healing.
Hello, y'all.
After our 3-week hiatus of not recording to finish this episode, here we are.
Yeah, we're back. We're back. I tell you, this sounds like the Hotel California. I tell you what, I can't complain, but that's what it feels like. I mean, you got all the nature and all the animals and then a pool. And I don't remember the last time I left.
I don't know either.
Probably need to, but I feel fine. I feel happy. I've been doing a lot. I've been outside every day.
That's good.
I know. It's just a weird change.
It's a lot easier to be outside in the heat when you have a pool to be in. You know what I mean? Like, it's...
Hell yeah.
It's so hard to be outside in the heat when it's just hot and you're just sweating.
Yeah. That's the only thing that got me back here. Not really. It's one of the
Thanks.
Only things. Like, no. I was like, I can't tolerate this heat without water.
Yeah,
and then I realized the heat was everywhere and I wasn't escaping it. Unless I move to Alaska, in which case, that's really dark, and I'm not going to say it on podcast.
Then you also have to deal with, like, the phases where they go through 24 hours of daylight and 24 hours of nighttime. Like, no thank you.
That's what I was going to say, and if I have to go through that, we will hit a major depression that I've never experienced before.
Do you know they also have a ton of earthquakes in Alaska?
Really?
Yeah, because they're on the same, like, fault lines, I guess, as, like, California. Like, little ones, not, like, major ones, but they can have pretty large ones.
One of my bucket list items. Have you ever seen Freaky Friday?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when the grandpa starts running around yelling, earthquake?
No.
You don't? That's one of my bucket list items. I have to do that at some point in my life.
Just run around and scream earthquake?
No, there has to be an earthquake. For it to be applicable.
I mean,
nothing major. I'm not manifesting anything major here. You know, just a little rumble. And then I can run around yelling earthquake. And then I can cross it off my bucket list. I have a very odd bucket list.
I can imagine. I've been your friend long enough to know that you're an odd duck.
Yeah, so came back to finish up Fawn. And in the last episode that you guys heard about Fawn, it was kind of all of the heavy shit. So today, Steph and I were going to come in with a part two of, you know, how you work on this.
This is technically part three.
Well, but shit,
this is supposed to be the positive side, the more healing side of it.
Listen. I'm sorry to the listeners for having a bit of a minty bee after everything. But hey, we still pulled through and I still recorded even though it was a hot fucking mess.
Yeah, but that's life.
It is. And I've been talking about it with Steph and other people in my life about how it's been interesting coming out of the brain fog following the trial and everything and just finally being kind of at a place that was safe and that I could relax. And it kind of felt like Washington all over again. You remember when I got there and I was just like,
mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what it felt like. This is exactly that, except I know what's happening. And so, it's been a very interesting, what's the word?
Experience.
a humbling experience in the sense where I had done all of this work. So I've been sitting here with myself like, you know what to do. You know how to get yourself out of this. And I've learned that it's not necessarily like the knowledge you have. It's just sometimes your brain and body need a certain amount of time, and nothing you do is going to help. It'll help ease the process because you'll be aware, but it took me, God, how many weeks has it been?
You're just shy of 2 months.
Since the trial ended?
Since it started. So you're just really a little over a month since it ended.
See, that it feels like it's been like 4 months.
That's because it was so traumatizing.
Well, yeah. So that's what I'm trying to say. Like,
so stressful. Like,
so like I haven't been like falling apart and having, you know, like suicidal ideations and all of the stuff that was happening before when I had no fucking clue what was happening. It's just been more or less like sitting and staring at a wall, like, all right, well, this is what we're going to do today. And it's okay. We know what's happening. And, you know, is this a day we need to go enjoy things? And if that's the case, just go do it.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, not to compare a murder trial to getting the flu, but like, it doesn't matter how much you take the medications or you drink the clear fluids or you drink the chicken noodle soup, like you're only going to heal as fast as your body allows you to heal.
Well, I think this is a great analogy, right? Because like you get the flu, you know, you have the flu, you know how to treat the flu.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the flu is easier to manage, but it's still probably going to take around the same time frame. Whereas when you don't know how to treat the flu, it might last longer. It might get worse.
Mm-hmm. And it's still frustrating.
Yeah, it's still, both experiences are frustrating, but I would say the experience where you don't know what's happening is scarier. Like this, this go around, I haven't been scared. It's just, I'm like, oh, Christ.
Yeah.
You know, so that's been, I think that's also helped. So for the listeners doing their work, you know, these experiences are going to continue popping up and your body's still going to respond the same way, but it's not quite as scary when you go and have the tools on how to handle it. It's just really fucking frustrating.
Yeah. Especially because you think because you have all of these tools and you quote unquote know what to do, you think the time should be sped up faster. But actually in reality, I mean, it is sped up faster because, okay, say for a rough estimate, it took you 6 weeks, but 3 years ago, it would have taken you maybe 4 months.
Yeah.
So like it only took you a month and a half opposed to 4 months, because you do have those tools and you know that instead of sitting here fighting with myself to push through and do this, like, yes, you still had to push through on like getting up and taking care of your kids and, you know, making sure everybody's fed and making, you know, like the basic necessities, but you weren't sitting there being like, oh, I got to work out and I got to journal and I got to do this. You're like, no, if I need to go take a 2 hour nap, I need to go take a 2 hour nap.
Yeah, I'm not as hard on myself as I used to be. Like, I haven't journaled. I haven't done anything. I've meditated almost not every day for 2 months, Jesus, but like intermittently, and then more so in the past week. I finally felt like okay sitting down. But I force myself to still meditate when I'm not feeling well, because those are the times you can have the most breakthroughs according to science. And if you would like to learn all of that shit, go download Healthy Minds. And no, this is not an advertisement, even though I wish it was, because I fucking love that app. They're a nonprofit organization. They they're run by a bunch of doctors, just quick promo here, and they have they only run off of donations, and I think it's about 6 doctors that run it, and they talk about what mindfulness meditation does to your brain. They are actual doctors that are studying the science behind it. So they'll have like a 5 to 8 minute learning session, and then you can choose the length of time for your meditation session. So if you only have like 5 minutes, then you put 5 minutes in and you get to pick your speaker, male, female, accent, no accent. And then you can choose whether you want to do a sitting meditation or an active meditation. So if you're going on a walk, clearly, the speaker isn't going to tell you to close your fucking eyes. It's a totally different type of meditation. And it's been really interesting because they're catering to people who live busy lives and can't always sit.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, and it's helped me learn a lot. So,
well, it helps you get back into your body, because that's what Emma was having me do with my, like, building trust exercise with myself. She's like, because one of the things that you're having the most trouble with is, like, your weight and just feeling blah within your body and just not feeling good. She's like, getting you to connect back with your body is going to help everything else fall into place. You know, so, like, I only have to do something for 3 minutes. And so it's some form of stretching that I need to do for 3 minutes. And, like, as I've been doing that the last couple weeks, I've been starting to sleep more soundly at night. And she's like, that's because, you know, you're stretching your muscles, but you're moving your lymphatic system. And she's like, it's just having a positive effect all around for you. So meditation is very much so the same thing, because even though you may not physically be moving, but you're getting into that subconscious mind of yours that we don't tap into enough on a daily basis.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, personally, how I meditate probably is not the way you're supposed to, but, like, I think about nothing, and the things that do pop up, I try to keep mental note of what pops up, and then I go back to thinking about absolutely nothing, right? And then at the end of everything, it's like, okay, the things that popped up are clearly concerns for me right now. There's stuff that's on my mind. So then I write them down and make note of them and go from there. Now tell everyone who Emma is, because I don't think we've talked about Emma on the podcast yet.
Oh, Emma's my new coach. Well, she doesn't like to be called a coach. We both hate that word. She's my new mentor. So I'm doing a real intense, in-depth therapy with her, where she does a lot of root cause therapy and going through your trauma. And it's been so many tears. but it's amazing how quickly I can feel the effects of just having that space to go with somebody and just put it all out there. You know, it's very much so like the space that you and I share here. And then it just gets more in depth because she has even more tools than we do. But so I was talking to Emma about our upcoming series that we want to do about, like, the cyclical living and living within the seasons and, you know, seasons for connection and all that stuff. And she's super excited to come on if we will have her.
I would love to have her. I would love to have her when I'm ready to cry again, because I've been pretty numb.
Yeah.
And that's been, you know, that's been a really nice part of being me lately. But, you know, I know those feelings will come back. So, like, I mean, I have cried. I'm not, like, totally, like, numb, but just obviously. I'm a lot more I don't give a fuck lately than I have been in the past.
Mm-hmm. I understand that.
And not necessarily in a bad way. I think it's, like, one of the best things that ever happened to me, because I was, like, super controlling and anal retentive and needed things to be a certain way. So releasing a lot of that control, because I have had to over the last 2 years, has been something I've definitely needed.
Mm-hmm.
So my best advice,
as we all do,
if your life is, you know, going out of control, just get on the roller coaster and ride the ride. It might be the best thing that ever happened to you.
That's for sure.
So going into the better parts of Fawn, or I guess, I mean, like we've done the last three, fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. We've talked about where it is in the body, the sources and motives, blah, 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 blah. And then we kind of talk about positive reminders and solutions and provide you some encouragement. So this episode is about just that. So jumping into it, I know we've talked about, just as a quick recap, fawning is basically kissing other people's asses systematically. Mm-hmm. You have been trained to do this. You have been trained to people please, unintentionally or intentionally, however it happened. You are here and listening to this podcast for a reason. And if you have listened to the last two episodes, mm-hmm. you will have heard, as I just covered, where this comes from, where it is in your body, and kind of the maladaptive coping behaviors. I know I've repeated myself three times now, but I'm trying to come up with a good intro into this episode.
They're used to us by now. If they've listened this long, they're used to us.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry, guys. I talk in circles to come up with one thing. I'm a verbal processor. So, just as a reminder, when you're fawning a lot, you're focusing a lot of your energy into other people and you're perpetuating a cycle of abandoning yourself. And what does that sound similar to?
It's another wound or a trauma response.
A wound.
I mean, are you being obvious? The abandonment wound?
Yeah, there you go. I was just staring at you like,
is this a trick question that she wants me to say abandonment wound? Or are we talking about the rejection wound?
No,
or...
I left it right out there widely open. So this is fawning can be similar to that, wherever your root is. And if you're interested in finding out the root of that, please go listen to our Primal Wounds episodes. But yeah, so you're focusing all of your energy into others, leaving no energy for yourself. So you just continue abandoning yourself. That is a reminder. I said that this episode was going to be more positive, but some of the reminders have like, they're harsh reminders and we're delivering mm-hmm. them with love. This is not a useless response. Fawning is not. It works very, very well in situations where de-escalation is necessary. So please remember that as a positive reminder. This is not your cross to bear. It is not a burden. It is something that you could actually use in times of escalation. You could kind of mold it, you know?
Because this was all about placating, right? This was the one where you're trying to...
Yes, it's all about placating. So, well, I guess in this situation, it's not a useless response and it does work well, very well in situations where de-escalation is necessary. And that's where we would kind of get into feigning, right? Which I know we're going to talk about on the next episode where we cover these kind of three-ish new ones that psychologists have come up with. And I guess when you mold the fawn response intentionally and you work on yourself and then you make a deliberate choice to fawn or befriend someone in an escalated mm-hmm. situation that is a manipulative, and it doesn't, I don't mean that in a necessarily bad way, but it is a manipulative and intentional decision. You are like, I am going to pretend to get along with this person, which is to keep the situation de-escalated or to keep someone safe. So mm-hmm. that would fall under feigning, which, interesting. We'll talk about that next episode.
Well, and so I was going to mention too that like if you are the type of woman that has a hot-headed spouse, mm-hmm. even though you may not agree with why he is acting the way he is acting, you may start agreeing with him to try and amp up the situation, but to de-escalate it, because you know if he feels like you're on his side, it's going to bring the situation down. Opposed where if you're like, you're being a fucking asshole and you're talking out your ass right now, like, because you know that's just going to make things worse for either just you, the kids, everybody around you. Like, so I feel like that would be an example of fawning. But he's not necessarily like, doesn't necessarily have to be an abusive relationship, but you know, some people are just short tempered and you just have to agree for your own fucking safety and sanity, you know?
Yeah. And adding on to what you said, to a degree, for this example specifically, like an abusive marriage, like you're saying, we could almost say, I'm trying to come up with a term. That's why I'm pausing. I can't think of it right now. You know how I can't think of it. I'm just going to talk and maybe you can come up with the mental illness I'm talking about. They describe having alternate personalities. They have different alters.
Like multiple personality?
It could be multiple personality. But have you been hearing the thing about trauma? And I don't want to dive too much into it because I don't want to go on that rabbit trail. I just want to
rabbit. Now we go on rabbit trails?
Yeah. Yeah. Bunny holes and rabbit trails. So, listen, we come up with our own terms here. Just like we come up with our own cuss words. So
you're like Alice in Wonderland over here, following the rabbit.
I truly am. And that's what it feels like sometimes. Which would make my mother the Red Queen. Off with her head!
Fitting. Fitting.
Okay, so how we talk about alters. People have been talking about alters lately as... it's the easiest way to describe it. Personalities that you have developed to survive certain situations for periods of time. So like throughout your childhood, you could develop. And so living as this person who's doing these behaviors for such an extended period of time, obviously it's something you could easily revert back to because you've lived as that character. Think about it like acting almost. you've lived as that character, and as you evolve into a different character, you can still access that character. Does that make sense? Is that, that's kind of the easiest way I've seen it explained. And I'm seeing that a lot outside of the mental illness it's categorized under. Like they can say that any, or they have said that anybody with trauma can have alters. And it's not literally where I'm like, hi, my name is, I'm feeling like Bob today. You know, like it's not like that. Mm-hmm. It's not that crazy switch. It's just that they're trying to, you know how you and I were talking about people are breaking things down extensively. Like, I don't use that language because I don't identify with it as much. I can understand. Like, there's a 15-year-old Jamie living inside of me, and I could call her my alter because I definitely could tap into that part of me, but I don't relate with that language, so I don't use that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you talking about DID with dissociative identity disorder? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. And so think about, break that down. Dissociative. What do people do 9 times out of 10 when they're in a traumatic situation? And it gets super traumatic. They disassociate. And sometimes, and so this, I don't know too much about this to start speaking in depth, but I have heard here and there. So going back to your point of the abuse of marriage, this woman, right? She has decided enough is enough. She wants to get out. This is dangerous. She's seen the light, blah, blah, blah. And she understands the best way to ensure her safety to escape that situation is to play as her quote unquote alter, to play as the fawner she has lived as for the many, 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 many years to pretend. And that's doing this entire podcast with you and all of these series has made me realize, which is why I wanted to do this series, that you have a psychologist over here talking about this condition and a psychologist over here talking about this condition, and they're talking about the same fucking thing, but they're using different terms.
Yeah.
And I wanted to find a way to mesh all of these together so people could understand better, I guess, because it has been one fucking ride taking notes on all of this and connecting dots.
So it is saying that like what can trigger alters. And they're saying that it does have a lot to do with DID, which is dissociative identity disorder, because like you were saying before, a lot of these personalities have been developed or identities have been developed through different phases of your life because you are experiencing different types of abuse or trauma. So that's how you have basically survived that situation.
So I want to see if you are similar to me in this way. Could you, if you needed to, for, I don't want to start throwing shit out and make you sad, so I'm trying to think. Could you, if you needed to, in present day, if the situation called for it, kind of like almost tap back into 15-year-old Stephanie who's caretaking for her mother, and that had to have been traumatic for you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, could you snap back into 15-year-old Stephanie?
Emma and I did that a couple weeks ago, actually. I think I was closer to, I don't remember if we did 15 or 19, but somewhere around there.
Was it 15 or 19 when that was going on with your mom? Why do I always think 15?
I was actually 13 when my mom was diagnosed with.
Well, damn, I'm just all the way off.
I was 12 when my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. My parents officially like separated when I was just, my dad moved out when I was 13. But it was really just me and my mom basically from like 13 on, because John was in boarding school. Then he was home for a little while. But yes, so Emma and I did do that exercise, and that was really tough. That was a really tough exercise to do.
I bet. That's a really hard question for me to answer, because all I remember throughout the trauma was escaping and partying. And I remember other things, but that's what I did to survive, right? That's what I didn't stick it out. I didn't stay around for certain things. And we're not going to get into that in this episode. But all I remember doing is partying with my friends and having a good time.
Yeah.
And so, like, as you have seen, Jamie can absolutely snap back into that mode to survive. Just having a good old time with my friends. Everything's a good time. So that, you know, as I said, I don't feel comfortable for me personally calling that an alter, but like, I guess certain psychologists would use the term to describe, like, can you snap back into certain parts of yourself that you no longer are at your core to survive?
Yeah, because you that's like party Jamie.
Yeah.
You know, like for me, 19-year-old stuff was very responsible. I was living on my own. Mm-hmm. I was going to college full time. I was working full time. I was supporting myself. So it was very much so the same way I was after Matt died. And mm-hmm. I just regimentally had to keep doing everything I had to do because who else is going to do it for me? When I was in college, all my friends were partying and living at home with their parents and getting to do this and getting to do that. And, you know, getting to choose what colleges they went to or universities, and maybe they moved cross country. Like, I had to make the decisions that always revolved around somebody else. And that I didn't realize until last year when I was going to move back to Connecticut, and I couldn't figure out why I was having such a hard time making decisions, because the only decision I've ever been able to make 100% for myself was when I moved to North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been almost 9 years. But other than that, every other decision I have made since I was 13 years old has directly been in correlation to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty empowering to make a decision for yourself, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's also why it's so paralyzing for me, because like in one of our first sessions, Emma just sat there and asked me, she's like, what do you want? And I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, what do you mean you don't know? She's like, and I don't mean that in like a condescending tone, but like, let's dig into that. And that's when I explained what I just said to you. She's like, that makes sense why it's such a loaded question for you, because you've never been able to just get up and be like, I want to take dance lessons. I want to play softball. I want to plan a trip to Italy. I want to do this. She's like, because you were always stuck in a place where your decision was going to affect somebody else and you couldn't allow that to happen.
So as we said with the source, probably in episode 2 or 1, I don't know, go find out for yourself. This response can be habitual, this response can become habitual, especially when this type of behavior is developed in childhood. We form a habit of becoming codependent on the state of others' emotions because we equate that with our own safety and security.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you see big emotions happen in others, sometimes it pings off as danger. And then you're like, what can I do to make this person happy? Because you either live with them, you work with them, you are in close quarters with them in some way. They impact your life, or they impact the life of someone you love. And so then that spider webs out, and all of a sudden you're people pleasing for all of fucking North Carolina. All of a sudden you're people pleasing for not only the people in your life, but, you know, their extended people. You know, like, a perfect example of what happened the other day when you were like, someone has upset me. And I was like, abso-fucking-lutely not. We cannot have that. I will rip them to shreds. Tell me, point me in a direction. Point me in a direction and aim me towards a computer, because it's going down.
And y'all, Jamie's brain just magically came back. All I had to do 6 weeks ago was make her mad again.
All you have to do is make me fawn. And I will just.
No, you come. Were fawning. You were fawning for 6 weeks. I
know, but my actions and behaviors with you were fawning as well.
No, Jamie was ready to fight, y'all. She was like full on fight club.
Yeah, my fight mode. My fight mode kicked in. Absolutely. It was more of a flood. It is okay to feel like you don't know who you are when you start this journey. Lack of identity can make you feel a range of emotions: worthless, useless, confused, lame because you're copying others, selfish. And we feel selfish because over time, the line between our own problems and others becomes a very gray area, very blurred. And we literally do not know the boundaries between other people's problems and our own. Because if you think about it, we can make anybody's problems our own, right? Like, you can look out into the world and be like, well, that could become my problem one day. And then somehow that has now become a burden on your shoulders.
Couldn't that also be a little bit of like savior complex?
Yes, which could. Which wound is that? Which fucking wound is that? Oh no.
Is that the injustice wound?
Yes, it could tie into the injustice wound a little bit. I think I did a little ditty on the trauma response note somewhere about how maybe at the very end I was going to suggest doing. Actually, no, never mind. To see I think I related which ones to which wounds.
So you said fawn is abandonment with codependency mask. Injustice is fight, because it's the harsh critic mask. Freeze and fawn is humiliation because of the masochist mask.
Ooh, yeah, that would make sense. Mm-hmm. Humiliation.
So yes, you it down all the way at the bottom.
And also, like, you could think of fawning as, and I don't know if we've said this, it also could make sense for it in a sense that your needs were made to feel not important. You were humiliated in the sense you were shamed for having needs as a child. Mm-hmm. And that's why and how you might have learned to just, it was easiest to survive making others happy.
And you talked about that in the last episode with your mom, how you were responsible for her her feelings, because words are hard as a child.
Yeah, and that definitely bled over into adulthood in ways that weren't quite as obvious. But reflecting back through my own timeline stuff, my own self-therapy, there was a lot of ways I now see how that bled over into adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, going back to the main point, the only way you undo this, what is this? Only way you undo this is creating a routine and identity for yourself. And I said I wanted to make that a talking point because it's like, how do you do that? But I think we've kind of unintentionally talked about that a little bit in this episode. Trying new things, creating routines and schedules that work for you. What works best for you? You have to sit down and write out what your perfect day would be, what your perfect life would be. You have to try new things to figure out if you don't like them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly over time, I made a TikTok about this. You start learning stuff and you pay attention to what feels like coming home and what feels like relearning it. And that is how you find yourself.
Well, and you have to learn a big thing that, like, just because somebody is having emotions over something does not mean it is your responsibility to take on those emotions as well. That does not mean you cannot support somebody through a tough time or a difficult time, but it is not your responsibility to do the work for them or to force them to do the work, because they can only do the work if they really want to.
Well, you know? You know what's funny? The biggest power move I've learned through all of this, right? And it is the hardest thing any fawner will ever do, is that you want to take control. You want to help them. You want to make them feel better. But ultimately, once you start to realize, hey, this isn't so good for me, you want them to change. So you try all of these different things to get them to change, when in reality, the only way you get them to change is the same way you are trying to change yourself, which is subjecting yourself to things. And the only way you could subject them to figure out how to emotionally regulate for themselves is to stop, to cut off the supply.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way. They either go find a new supply, and I'm talking about this in narcissistic terms because I don't know another way to say this. Not everybody that is using you as an emotional conduit I'm not saying everyone that does that is a narcissist. Maybe they have their own wounds, their own bullshit, but like, they're either going to fix themselves or they're going to walk away mm-hmm. and find a new supply. They're either going to have to learn how to regulate for themselves, because you're sitting there and you're like, okay, your bad mood is not going to dictate my mood. I do not have to fix this. This is not my responsibility. I can maybe help giving you some encouraging words, but I'm not going to placate this temper tantrum anymore. I'm just going to walk away from it.
Yes.
It is the same exact thing as raising a child. You do not give in to them every single time. It doesn't mean you have to be mean. You can still sit there and validate their feelings, because I'm sure it is the worst thing in the fucking world that they didn't get a cookie before dinner. But that doesn't mean you're going to give them the cookie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's very simple terms for this. But so that was the most empowering thing for me to realize. And it might have been asked backwards, but it was like, oh, wait, I can change them potentially. I actually could have some control over the situation by actually backing off.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I realized that, it was easier for me to do it. So like I just said, other people will have feelings and emotions about you shedding or changing anything that doesn't work for you. This is normal. And you will want to fawn. They might even make you feel responsible for their discomfort. Break the cycle. And then I said mindset shift. This tactic can actually be helpful for those who choose to adapt and respect your journey. It will force them to learn how to regulate their own nervous system, should they choose to respect your boundaries and stop using you as an emotional conduit. So basically what I just said. So those are all just some little reminders. So solutions, we kind of covered those, some of those in the reminders. Clearly, I didn't have enough time. Well, I did have plenty of time. That's an excuse. Clearly, I didn't organize these notes well enough. But for your solutions, you practice becoming a recovering people pleaser, as TikTok so lovingly calls it. You practice communication exercises to gracefully exit a situation that makes you fawn without abandoning yourself. You get to know yourself, which we kind of talked about. Get creative, play, try new things. Play has been a huge part of it. At least for me, I had to learn how to play with my kids because I had no clue. I didn't know how to tap into that childlike version. Because if you think about it, if you've been a fawner your whole life and you're 30, there's a 5-year-old side to you that never got to learn themselves either. You know, so it's kind of like you're starting back at the beginning. Now, I'm not suggesting you go pick up a bunch of Barbies, but if you want to, and that's something like maybe, have you seen Laura Love's new series, Doing Things That She Got in Trouble For as a Child?
Mm-mm.
So she's been going, like, making a series about it. Like, she got in trouble for being clumsy. So she decided to start rollerblading. I don't know. There was a whole thing behind it. And she's done other things. If anyone, go watch it for reference. It's a good series. But just, like, learning how to play. Because there's certain parts of yourself, like I was never allowed to wear skirts or belly shirts. And now all I wear is belly shirts and shorts. Like I, you know, there was parts of me that I wanted to do these things. And it's not out of rebellion now. It's just like that was always who I was. That's always how I wanted to dress. And then I felt shamed into it. And then, so there's certain parts of me I have intentionally and unintentionally explored over this last 2-3 years. Just as an example for the listeners. So the other thing you can do is slowing down, checking in with yourself, and identifying some feelings. You learn the triggers of your people pleasing, what doesn't feel safe to you, what can decrease your exposure, or where can you decrease your exposure to these things that make you feel unsafe, where can't you? And then do a lot of reflecting. Basically, am I saying or doing anything that I don't like or want to do to make someone else feel more comfortable? Was it necessary? Is there another way that I could have responded? You have to reflect on the things throughout your day or maybe in the past about situations that I just described. And you have to actually write these out as if it's a kind of a test, like a project. I don't know how to explain it. You have to think your way through some of these actions and see them on paper. You have to treat yourself. You can journal. Yeah, like you are your biggest project. These are journal prompts that we can definitely put in our upcoming journal that we've been talking about. We promise we'll get it out eventually. Okay, listen, you're listening to a bunch of mentally ill. We will, because we're changing and we're doing better. God damn it. And I've said that before too.
That we are.
Do a lot of grounding work, checking in mentally and physically, meditating, doing nothing at all, forcing yourself to come to both a mental and physical halt. Because when you do that, other things start to pop up. I promise you. Might take a few weeks, but it works. I sound like a broken record on that one.
Something is always going to pop up.
I promise it works. Meditating is literally the hardest thing I've ever had. Well, I say that a lot, but it's one of the hardest things I've ever had to learn how to do. Becoming healthy.
Yeah, we can also promise you that something is going to pop up.
Yeah. I was listening to a learning session the other day, and they said that it took people, long story short, they could switch out of their automatic mode. I can't think of what the name for it, into their executive brain. I think that's what it's called. It was a short 7-minute learn, and he was saying people who meditate can have the ability to flip this on and off like a switch. Like if they're getting distracted.
Between their conscience and their subconscious?
To a degree, that wasn't it. It was executive something, and it had something to do with a part of the brain. Because he was talking to a neuroscientist, and they actually studied the human brain with expert meditators, beginner meditators, and the process of like how it starts to help. But they were talking about how expert meditators can consciously look at something and go, I'm distracted, and switch over to their executive, whatever it's called. This is going to bother me. They can switch back over to that way more easily than someone who isn't practicing mindfulness. And so when you're doing that with meditating and you get distracted and you're like, oh, I'm distracted, back to meditating, you're teaching your brain how to recognize distraction and how to get back on task. And it is a slow and painful process, but I have become a much better focuser because of it. Because you are, when you're doing guided meditations, at least when you're first learning, you have this voice that's like, it's okay if you got distracted, but hey, we're doing this. Come back and breathe. Stop thinking about anything.
Are you talking about executive function?
Nope, it's not executive function. It was all...
Because it says executive functions include basic cognitive processes such as attentional control, cognitive
inhibition.
Inhibition. Inhibitory control, working memory, and cognitive flexibility.
Hang on. I did it.
Meditate back in the early 90s.
I'll stop by
the
it.
First thing I noticed was how extreme just what felt like failure at the time. By now, you know that intentionally bringing awareness to the present moment can deactivate the default mode network. At the same time, it activates a different set of brain regions called the executive network. This is the network of intention and conscious choice. When we are driven by habit, the activity in this network dims. But when we do something with intention, it gets active. And it's called the executive network for a reason. This is the part of the brain that manages our emotions and impulses. It gives us the ability to consciously choose how to respond instead of blindly reacting out of habit. So even though I felt like I was failing in those years, I was actually training some important brain networks.
See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's your subconscious versus your conscious mind.
I just couldn't think of the second word because he said executive and my brain was like, oh yeah, executive function. And then he said network. And I was like, oh, I've never heard of that one.
Which is the same thing as function.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I didn't look it up. I just believed him because he was a doctor. And that was, seems like a good person. I've been listening to him for a while.
Oh my goodness.
All I know is his advice has helped me. So I'd follow that man anywhere. I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. So when you are doing this work, this checking in with yourself, this grounding work, however, you know, you choose to process all of the feelings to come through healing this part of yourself, it is imperative, and Steph and I have said this, we've beaten this horse into the ground, to confront your responses with love. And love doesn't always mean... Love doesn't always equate with kindness. And I hate saying the term tough love, but it's more like you've got to become your own accountability partner. When you are learning about these responses and you notice yourself doing one, you know, don't write yourself off and be like, it's okay, I'm just traumatized. No, you call it out, you hold yourself accountable, and you come up with an action plan of how you can do better. I'm not saying when Steph and I say confront these things with love, confront them with like you would love a child. Loving a child doesn't mean that you always dismiss the behavior. It means,
or even your best friend,
it means teaching them or offering to teach them or offering to help them. You need to offer to help yourself through this. You know, it's not a get out of jail free card.
Especially because so much of this does stem from our childhoods, that it is a lot of inner child, inner teen work, you know, and depending on how old you are, you know, it could be young adult because you didn't learn, you know, if you're 60 and you're just learning this stuff now, clearly you have a much longer timeline to heal opposed to a 21-year-old that is learning about this now.
We can get Lynn on the podcast and she'll talk about how difficult it's been.
Yeah.
Because she's been, you know, she's 72 and she's been on this journey now for about 2 years. And
yeah,
she too has said this is one of the hardest things she's ever done, especially because, like, you know, her mental faculties are declining. Not like, you know, she's not sick or anything. It's just when you get older, our brains stop working as fast. Mm-hmm. And that it's not as easy to rewire a 72-year-old brain as it is a 31-year-old brain. And these are all the conversations we have, which is fascinating. But to me, it is incredibly inspiring that a 72-year-old woman would be this committed to dying healthy instead of just giving up. She is a shining beacon of example. A statue needs to be made out of her.
Well, I mean, in reality, she could be around for another 20 years. So why would she not want to be healthier?
Well, I mean, some people just don't care. They get to that age and it's like, well, I am the way I am and it is what it is. And this is the way our generation did things. And she's choosing differently. And I think like, not an example needs to be made out of her. That's a bad thing. Like, I wish living with people who are doing that work. Oh, my God. It's so much easier than living with people who aren't. There's challenges for sure, but this is it's easy. There's definitely challenges, but like when somebody fucks up, it's like they hold themselves accountable. Mm-hmm. And like nobody else has to do that work. Like I don't have to go and be like and convince anyone of how they were wrong. They just apologize. It's the most fascinating thing I've ever seen in my life. I feel like it's very weird.
We are so grateful to those of you who have allowed us to take up space in your lives and supporting us while we share some of our most vulnerable moments.
As James said, your support means the world to us. So we would absolutely love to know your thoughts on the show. So please leave us a review on any of our platforms. And also make sure to follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. The links are posted in our show notes.
This concludes your tour with Stay Wild Trauma Child. Please remain seated until...
Oh, God, James. Thank you for listening. We love you. And as always,
stay wild.